Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind.
There are those of us who vaguely remember Danger Man, of course, Sir Phil Leonis being just one soul, who was a huge fan of the Danger Man series. And so it'd be particularly interesting if he does manage to connect to get his views on an episode that was written for the never produced fourth season of Danger Man, but emerged certainly within ITC schedules for The Champions, the first arguably tale of UK superheroes, we might say, or certainly European superheroes, given that you have two British lead cast members with Alexandra Bastido as Sharon MacReady and, of course, William Gaunt as Richard Barrett, accompanied, of course, by Craig Stirling, played as ever by Stuart Damon. To Trap a Rat is the episode's title. I believe it's the eighth episode of the only season of The Champions, all 30 episodes. And let's jump in straight away, quite literally jump in, using our superhero powers, to Jared Palmer. And Jared, what were your thoughts on this? Had you seen The Champions before?
I hadn't seen The Champions before, but I'd heard of them from, I think it was either one of your lectures that you brought that when I was at the university, or I think it was online or somewhere in terms of like science fiction TV series ranked.
To be precise, Jared, just taking you back using those superheroic powers, I compared Captain Scarlet with the Champions in the lecture that was focusing on the British superhero, etc., and compared Cloudbase with Nemesis and Colonel White with Tremaine and so on. So just to please that you kind of sort of remembered that from back in the day when you were an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln. And indeed, from back in the day, arguably, people are listening to this at a different time in the future when I also used to teach at the University of Lincoln. But there we are. That's another line entirely. So your thoughts then on this particular adventure?
I thought it was interesting, especially with the subject matter with drugs, because I didn't think that TV did that back in the day in terms of it, because I knew that drugs and a lot of things that were quite inappropriate for more like mainstream media around about that time was sort of like shoved to the side, or they were only appeared in small, very small media outlets in terms of TV. But I was actually surprised that they went full on into the subject matter, and it was very interesting to see, because especially it being the 70s as well, and also having like sort of like, I would say, sort of its own sort of standing in terms of like spy thriller and also like superhero sort of like TV show. And I actually did enjoy that dynamic, and I especially enjoyed the cast, because I think they worked pretty well together in terms of what was going on with the story. And I think I really did enjoy the plot, actually, because I think to do a story on that sort of subject matter at that time, I think it was an incredible thing to do.
In fact, the 1960s were clearly the permissive society. The issues relating to drugs were very much there. The situations were occurring. We had, of course, not just one, but two midweek drivettes. Sadly, they both passed since we spoke to them last, obviously. Kate O'Mara as the drug addict Jane Purcell. Kate, of course, known to Doctor Who fans as being the Rani, the original Rani, amongst other wonderful shows that she'd been part of. And, of course, the late, great Alexandra Bastido, keen animal sanctuary soul, and indeed contemporary of Annette Andre. So both Alexandra and Kate O'Mara. And I think actually really demonstrating that in so many ways they produce a couple of really outstanding performances here. Kate O'Mara in particular as Jane Purcell, demonstrating in a sense the challenges of an addiction, and clearly somebody who kind of is used by the agents of Nemesis to effectively solve the challenge. But again, I think the wide-eyed nature and the desperate nature of the addict was very much portrayed by both of those fine actresses, etc. Directed, of course, by Sam Wanamaker, who again no slouch in terms of the directing role and so on. What were your favourite moments that you might have actually had from this particular episode?
For me, I would say there were two for it. It was one, the bit where I think Kate O'Mara's character comes out of the hotel room and she's like really panicking and emotionally distressed, and the guard is looking there as if like, what's going on? And I think I really did like that because it showed sort of like the emotional stress of like someone like who is an addict and like they don't always know what's going on in terms of self-awareness. And I really did like it how they made her out to be like she looked like as she's been not only exhausted but like doing a lot of it through that episode. And also I did like the bit where I think Sharon like sort of like got her into like telling her where she got her supply from. Because I think the one thing I liked about this episode is she sort of takes a little bit more point in this episode in terms of a female role. And I actually did enjoy that dynamic in terms of like having to play the person in order to get what you want. So I actually enjoyed that part of the episode going forward.
I commented last week in the run-up to this that this was one of those shows where I know it has been commented when we looked at certainly the original episode at the beginning that all three lead stars managed to have immaculate coiffures. Their hair is never out of place in any sort of show whatsoever. That's not quite true in this particular instance, but of course there are some nods in the direction of what we would probably now view as blatant sexism. When of course Sharon McCreadie, having done such a good job in terms of connecting everybody and actually working through that, is basically told by Craig Sturley, Richard Barrett, "That's okay. You just stay there, Sharon. We'll handle it now and move off to sort the thing through on that system." Again, an interesting juxtaposition with respect to the elements of society in the 60s and the class situation, because as we find out as the narrative develops, it's actually being run as a as an offshoot of a kind of upper class scenario here, and what originally seems to be a fairly seedy, dirty, grimy kind of junkie dealer relationship, with obviously the peanut man delivering the illicit contraband, etc., suddenly becomes and unfolds as a not a national scandal, but arguably again an international challenge with that respect to that. How did you feel that the three agents of Nemesis, both Sharon, Craig, and Richard, interplayed with each other? Because obviously by this stage they'd kind of settled into the system. The series, as I said, it's often been talked about in terms of being renewed and being developed. That's never manifested in any way, shape, or form. The director of Hellboy, I think, was Guillermo del Toro, had expressed an interest around about the end of the 2010s in reviewing and renewing it. I mean, do you think there's a place for that? And do you feel that dynamic is there? Or is it very something which is very much of its time in the 1960s?
I think I would like to see a new adaptation of this show because I think for me that a lot of the science fiction shows that weren't as popular but are getting a bit more of a cult following or a lot more received now, I think I would like the idea of having to see this in a new adaptation for the modern era. And I would think from this, so example of the three leads in terms of like the chemistry as well, I think it would be a really good series ultimately, but it does depend on whether or not people have interests, and if there isn't any interest, where's the adaptation going to go?
Well, the powers, of course, of extrasensory perception, of telepathy, of superhuman strength and connections—they're all very much there. And obviously, the way in which Craig Sterling can survive his torture elements at the end of it. But we talked favorite moments. What about favorite characters? Who for you actually kind of really opened up in terms of, yeah, I mean, what was it? Sandra Hurst, of course, the villainess in many ways, or the gangster's moll, played by Idina Menzel. Was it indeed Kate O'Mara's Jane Purcell? Was it Michael Standing's portrayal of Frank Edwards? Where are you going to go, and which honorable mentions do you wish to actually share for your top characters?
So I would say for me, it was Sharon for this episode, just because she got a lot more exposure than the other two, especially with like having to play to get into the drug cartel, in terms of also having to like play the part, which I think for me And that for that time, I think that was pretty impressive to do for a TV show. I would also say I would give Kate O'Mara a honorable mention. I've always enjoyed her acting in terms of from Doctor Who as the Rani. And I think as an actress, she's brilliant. And it's such a shame that she passed away so long ago now.
Well, absolutely. I think she was only in her mid-50s, actually, if memory serves, when she did actually go. So, again, one I never quite knows from that point of view. Stylistically, again, something we'll probably pick up with some of our other contributors. Did it kind of really carry with it the notion of 60s television, classic television, or do you think that it has actually stood up well across the decades?
Well, I think it has. I mean, for a lot of the 60s stuff that I have watched, I think a lot of it, especially the British content that we watched, was a lot of it was in black and white. So I was actually surprised to see it in colour, actually, which is very interesting from my point of view. But I think overall, I think it's held up. I think a lot of the TV shows I go back and watch and I look, and even though I can tell that they may not be as popular or like they were more high budget or lower budget, I think. For its time, I think it worked very well, and I think it still holds up to today's TV standards as well.
And of course, it was shot on film, which means that Blu-rays are available. They've managed to upscale it in terms of high definition and so on. Certainly, it still sort of fits in quite nicely for it from that line. Okay, the moment has arrived where we need to seek your score, Jared Palmer, for this particular episode of the Champions TV series. What are you going to go for?
I would say for me, I'd give it a 7. I really like the episode. I like the idea of the subject matter of the episode. I think the chemistry between the characters was really well. I would say there was a little bit of moments that it did drag on, but that was only for a small amount of time. And I did like the idea of having to set out the episode first before going there. And I also did like the concept of that all three of them have powers and that like only they know about it and not the boss. Because that's the one thing I actually liked about the episode, and I think the series is that the boss is a bit either he doesn't know or he's pretending not to know that they have the powers, and I think that's what I like because I sometimes do like the idea that the boss has all the cards, he knows everything, but at the same time, I do like that insecurity part where the boss doesn't know everything and he potentially things will surprise him.
I think the official line with Tremaine was that he was a character who suspected and always had some inkling, but at the same time was never willing to commit himself because he recognised that what he did have were three very good agents of Nemesis who would obviously do the business and solve the crimes and dispatch the miscreants, be they drug dealers or indeed international arms smugglers or whomever. We'll find out what other members of the Resonance Rewind team find out or thought about this particular episode shortly. We may even be able to squeeze into this program the thoughts of Rick Davey, who knows, from Quiet Media. But for now, Jared Palmer, keep practicing those champion-like powers. Okay, we've just heard from Jared Palmer and his views on this episode of The Champions. And we're clearly very keen to find out what our boiled peanut expert, Jessica Burtis, makes of this particular episode, given that it does actually feature peanuts as a mode of obviously transporting illicit and illegal drugs. Jessica, let's jump straight in. I know you were impressed with the Champions when you first saw them in the beginning episode a wee while back. On the basis of their fantastic hair, the way that their hairstyle never actually sort of slipped an inch in all sorts of ways. They tend to vary this a little bit. What are your thoughts, Jessica, on this particular episode?
Well, I have to say, the hair remains fabulous. They still look impeccable. But I have to say, I think this is a piece of anti-peanut propaganda, and I cannot approve of the anti-peanut propaganda. But I do think it's hilarious that they were like, what can we put drugs in? What would be like the carrier for drugs? And it was peanut. Because I don't think that's my, that would have been my go-to idea.
But did you hear about the local story?
Hearing some, just some ambiance from where I am. But no, I thought it was an interesting episode. I think the idea of trying to track down this kind of, this drug kind of situation going wild with the clubs, and they're using someone to pose as a junkie, and then they're using someone who is at risk for like addiction and all these things. I think it brought up a lot of ethical questions and concerns that kind of go beyond the usual just catching the bad guy. I think we see in a lot of shows, but I think the best part of it was the clothes, because I'm kind of still, I'm feeling, I'm a little bit, I'm questioning the approach to drugs here and addiction, and the use of someone to kind of like help track down where the drugs are. But I think I preferred the other version we've seen of the champions. But I think this was still an interesting look at kind of the 60s pop culture.
Yeah, as we said at the start of the whole piece, one of the interesting things about this particular adventure was it wasn't originally written for the champions. It was a show that was originally written for a series called Danger Man, which, as we noted, I think Phil Lynn is a particular fan of Danger Man, the precursor in many ways to The Prisoner, which we've seen in terms of ITC scenario. I just have to read out Rick Davies' line from Quiet Media. Rick, who will be joining us later on in this show, but via a telephone call. He basically said that we can apologise on his behalf with the excuse that he was at the zoo, bought a bag of peanuts, but they were a bit stale and chewy, and she was taken, and he was taken poorly. So sorry about that, Rick, but never mind. Clearly, obviously, entailed with this whole side of things. We saw a lot of issues relating to the class system here, because clearly the bad guys aren't necessarily the sort of the street guys, the street gangs. They're basically being employed by who we find basically are kind of upper crust citizens who basically have this little drug dealing thing as a scam on the side. Do you think that kind of says anything about the sort of culture at the time? And again, as was pointed out by Jared, quite brave really of a family-based TV show to actually go down this line of drug abuse within the 60s, specifically in London, and specifically with the opening, which is very much a hard-hitting side of things about keeping the drugs off the street.
Yeah, I do think it's very interesting, the approach to class, because I feel like the 60s were a time coming out of the 50s when kind of social positions were a bit more structured, or at least how it seems to me, especially after, like, I feel like World War I really changed how class is kind of looked at and how position and rank in society changed. And so having, I think, kind of showing the reality that often drug use and selling drugs and trying to kind of target people and predatory selling of drugs is like, it's something that's often in circles where people would say that this is an affluential circle where there wouldn't be these kinds of problems, and how oftentimes classes with more money can take advantage of low classes who don't make as much money and are more at risk for certain things. And I think that that's definitely something that we don't tend to see in a lot of the episodes. Like I said, it seems very, it makes sense that you're saying it was written for a different show, because it seems kind of like different from the champions that we've seen before. And I think from a lot of other shows that we've watched, in that it was dealing with some pretty gritty problems. And while I think it still had kind of a 60s approach to some things with like women, and I think that it still is an interesting, it poses a lot of interesting questions around ethics and, like you're saying, class. And I think that it's a good jumping point, even if it doesn't kind of resolve those things.
Yes, you mentioned obviously the gender issues, because it was interesting that Sharon McCready, the character played by Alexandra Bastidio, after basically going undercover, risking life and limb to actually get the thing sorted through, basically is kind of patted on the head and says, all right, we'll sort this out now. Just so, and then even then she comes back to actually rescue both Craig Sterling and Richard Barrett, because without her car, they would not have actually sort of been able to follow the sound of the microtransmitter that had been laid with the Peanut Man.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that was kind of the, I would like to say that it was like done on purpose, where they were kind of trying to show them treating her that way. I don't know, maybe they intended it for it to be written like that. But, you know, I don't know. But I think that I think that having her be kind of, I don't know, it's hard for me to say that she had like a lot of agency because at the same time, like you're saying, they kind of treated her almost like a little pet at one point. So it's, it feels a little bit, I don't know, I don't really know how to feel about it, but it definitely kind of gave me pause in that they're using women in this and then kind of like trying to take over from there. And, it's very odd, like you're saying, putting them at risk and letting them have this kind of position and then just kind of like taking it away and kind of save the day. But I don't know, I think also, I mean, I don't remember having an issue with the champions in the last time we saw an episode around gender. And I think that a lot of the shows in the 60s, even though I think they still had some approaches to women being portrayed that I'm not too fond of, I think a lot of shows were trying to take steps and were trying to do things that even though we might not see it as quite so progressive right now, for the time it was more progressive back then and taking more of a risk.
So, what were your favorite moments from this particular episode to Trap a Rat? What were the ones which stood out and you think, or any indeed honorable mentions you'd like to share?
I think the zoo. I think that the zoo was really interesting. I think it's not a moment, but I mean the clothes are their own moment. I feel like again, the fashion is just I love it so much whenever we watch these shows. The Champions just has exceptional fashion and I feel like it just I don't know, I'm not it just enhances everything about the show because it really makes me remember where this is and the pop culture of the time and kind of the cultural it's set in. The cultural context, but I think the zoo is probably my favorite moment.
Yeah, lots of kind of intercuts between the animals that are obviously behind bars and, of course, the animals that are outside the bars and how they actually cope with respect to that, which would be quite an interesting metaphor to actually apply. Okay, favorite characters and again, usual honorable mentions for the range of folk we've actually got here. Obviously, we've got Kate O'Mara's Jane Purcell. Kate O'Mara, as I mentioned earlier, was indeed a semi-regular midweek drivette, sadly passed a few years ago. Alexandra Bastido, likewise. And also a colleague of Vanette Andre, as Sharon McCready. Or are you going to go down the line of Tremaine, the ever patient, curmudgeonly head of Nemesis, or indeed Idina Rone's incarnation of Sandra Hurst, or possibly Craig Stirling or Richard Barrett, played by Stuart Damon or William Gaunt? Where are you going to go, Jessica?
I mean, I think honorable mention for favorite character are the peanuts themselves, all of them. But I think for favorite character, probably Jane, because I wanted to know more about her character, and I feel like she deserves more justice. And I think that maybe it's the characters who aren't featured as much in the shows that end up being my favorites, and I tend to like the characters that I feel like you can kind of have a backstory in your head for them. And I want to know more about them. So I think Jane for this
And of course, the peanut vendor played by the actor
one.
Toke Townley, who again I wasn't familiar with, but had obviously sort of managed to create a good character aspect for his particular role. The official biography basically he was in Look Back in Anger, Emmerdale Farm, and a whole variety of other things. Passed away back in 1984. So there you go. Okay, we also have on the call. A debut attempt for Resonance Rewind. Marin, from what you've heard so far, is this an episode that you feel, yeah, I'm going to be checking that out on Amazon Prime so that when it comes to it, I can join in another one of our serial recordings here and probably actually connect with Rick Davey, who, as we said, has had peanut issues?
Yeah, I mean, I did a little bit of research just before, and I immediately thought peanuts. I immediately thought of Jessica. But yeah, but I mean, if it was 1968, it came out, was it? Well, it's not a 60s show without some sexism, so at least it's got that in there. And I also looked at the outfits that you were talking about, Jessica, and oh my, they were great. Oh, they were like peak 60s outfit. The color, the hair, everything. It looks great. And yeah, I think I'm really intrigued, especially about this peanut and drug thing. I've never seen this before.
Okay, Jessica, what's your score going to be? A mark out of 10 for this particular adventure of the champions?
I think I'm giving it a 7, because I did like the other one better. But the clothes, I don't know. Maybe I'll give it a 7.5 because, again, the fashion deserves a little bit of a squeak up. It's just too good not to consider in the score.
And you're currently reporting from the banks of the River Cam, I believe. Is that right?
Yes, it's very picturesque. The weather in Cambridge is beautiful. England had a it's, the weather has been very kind today. I was very surprised to see a shining sun, but it has been so beautiful seeing all the fields full of the yellow flowers and all of the cows grazing, and it feels I don't know, it's very picturesque. I'm very happy.
All right, in this serialization of Resonance Rewind, we've heard what Jared Palmer makes or thought of To Trap a Rat. We've also heard Jessica Burtis's views from the banks of the River Cam in Cambridge and her thoughts on the whole thing. And Marin might well be persuaded to actually watch it as well. But let's find out what Anna Koshkinel makes of this one before, of course, we also connect via telephone to Rick Davey somewhere in this great land. Anna, your thoughts on To Trap a Rat, please.
So, starting with the title, I think it's quite suggestive. I liked it. It was pleasant to watch. I didn't like particularly the scene where Craig and Richard were taking Sharon out and they were doing all the stuff, and then she came with the car and she was like, "Yeah, it's girls that do it how they should." I liked that one. What else can I say? I don't know. It was good. At first, when it started, I didn't realize it was going to be about drug addicts, and I didn't know the main character that's going to portray a drug addict would be a woman. So for that age, I think it's quite an interesting approach to have her. If I'm not wrong, it was Sandra Hurst. No, Jane Purcell. Jane Purcell, yeah. I think even though she was a drug addict, she looked very good for one, and she did an incredible job. So yeah, that's my take on it for now.
Well, Katie O'Mara, of course, playing Jane Purcell. And I suppose she was from a fairly well-off family, so it was more a case of how it wasn't just a case of the lower echelons of society that were suffering from this problem. It was somebody who basically was clearly from what would be regarded as an upper middle class background, at least. Merrin Hudson has actually joined us again, which is always good, Merrin. We were talking about whether you were being persuaded to watch this by Jessica Burtis's thoughts on the champions. Did you manage to do so? And if so, what have you made of it?
Yeah, I did. I was able to watch it last night, and I actually thought it was really good. Yeah, I mean, I did love all the outfits that Jessica was talking about, and it did some points were a bit did make me laugh, especially when they like start flipping people over their shoulders and everything. But I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, they did have those superheroic powers, of course, that they got through having been rescued by a group of spiritually enlightened beings in Tibet, obviously on their very first mission that they went on. Anna, what about favourite characters? You shared some of the favourite moments. What about your favourite characters for this one?
That's hard because I really like the trio together. And I don't know who it's hard. Probably I'll go with the trio together, but give that special mention to Alexandra Bastedo, which played Sharon MacReady, because she was just so good. And that scene where she, and not only that, there were multiple scenes, even when she attached that little thing in the car, she just did it so well, and she proved once again that women can do it on their own without needing the help of men. So what more could you ask for?
Yeah, well, certainly Sharon MacReady's role was just one of several that Alexandra Bastida was famous for. I like to feel she always liked to enjoy her times on the Midweek Drive as well that she spent with us. So there you go. Anyway, I'm sure Alexandra's looking down now saying, yeah, of course. What about yourself, Marin? Favourite characters or indeed any honourable mentions?
I've got to agree with Sharon's role. I like how she was kind of she had a female agency, even though the men kind of silenced her sometimes, so saying like, what is it? Oh, it's our turn now. And I was just kind of like, but she was leading it and she was on it, and she was my favorite.
Yeah, I think probably the only excuse you can give from a narrative point of view for that is that arguably she was known, obviously, to the drug dealers, and therefore it was a case of they didn't want to actually run the risk of her having her cover blown. I mean, that might be stretching Ralph Smart's view on the whole sort of thing as the writer, but it was one sort of way in which you could conceivably say, okay, it was a bit of inter-agency banter. With the agents of Nemesis, of course, Richard and Craig and Alexandra. Okay, let's move on then, because we will be hearing, as I say, in the near future, all being well, admittedly via telephone from Rick Davey, who will provide us with, I'm sure, some other insights in terms of this. Anna, what's your score out of 10 going to be for this particular adventure?
Oh, so even though I liked it, there were quite a few things that did not make sense. The first one being, for example, when the trio were able to spot her from the 10th floor inside
Well, they
and
do have superpowers, of course. I mean, that's the reason. They are sort of, in many ways, the first example of British superheroes. So, you know, all of their senses have been heightened and enhanced to superhuman areas.
I like how they were being able to hear like better than others, so I'll give them that. But altogether, I think, and it's gonna be a high mark, even though I said it's not, it's probably gonna be an 8 out of 10.
Okay, that's fine. And Marin, what about yourself? What score will you award this for your first official score on Resonance Rewind?
I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10. I think it was good. I think there was a few bits that were a bit iffy, especially with like the men taking over from the woman. But I mean, the outfits itself deserve like 5 points. So
Those 60s outfits still actually giving a connection, as Jessica pointed out, certainly well worth accessing. Well, as I say, hopefully we'll be speaking to Rick Davey in a few moments. If not, we'll be having some more wonderful music on the programme. But just a little heads up for the 200th edition of Resonance Rewind. Yes, 200. We started it in the pandemic times, and now it's still thriving in the Zoom era, as we say, or as indeed as Phil Leader says in the trailer. We will be keeping very quiet. We probably won't be saying a word at all. Why? Because it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and our voices have been taken away, and it's hush.
Okay, we've heard from the team. We've heard from Jared Palmer. We've heard from Jessica Burtis. We've heard from Anna Koshkinel. And, of course, Marin Hobson in terms of their thoughts with respect to Tetrapparat. All pretty positive, it has to be said. But what about our ITC expert, our ITC scholar in many ways? Obviously, Quite Publications' finest and ITC sole publisher of so many wonderful things, Rick Davey. Rick, welcome to the programme. We finally managed to connect with your good self.
Thank you very much indeed. Yes, thank you very much for having me on. I'm sorry for connection problems at my end. I think I'm still living in the 60s, just like the champions, to be honest. But what could we do? But I want to caveat my my thoughts today by firstly saying that I do love the champions as a series and as a concept. I think it's great fun. It's one of my favourite ITC shows. I think the three leads, as they were in this episode, have a lot of charisma. They have a great sort of rapport between the three of them. You can tell that they obviously would have got on in real life, and that comes across on the screen. But I have to say, I found, compared to many of the other episodes in the series, I found To Trap a Rat a little bit disappointing because I felt it was a little bit of a waste of the format. The only situations in which we saw the three display their superpowers, it was almost as though that had been shoehorned in. Oh, we must use a bit of superpower, so let's have this scene here.
Well, maybe that's because John Drake didn't have any superpowers, you see. When John Drake was doing it, he had no superpowers whatsoever. He just had his own wits. So perhaps they just thought, well, you know, John Drake hasn't got superpowers, so maybe we'll use the script but just throw in a few superpowers.
Absolutely. It felt like a script for another kind of ITC show, didn't it? Like a Danger Man or a Gideon's Way or a police procedural type series.
Which indeed we believe it was, as far as the scholars have actually pointed out, that this was originally written for, I think, the fourth season of Danger Man, but that was never obviously filmed, so they had it in their back pocket, so to speak.
There you go. And that, I think, lets it down a little bit, because I think the beauty of the champions is the sort of daftness of the sudden use of superpowers and that side of things. I think that's what gives the series its charm. You know, the Danger Man has its charm because of the lead actor and because of the grittiness of it. You know, Gideon's Way, very much the sort of London grittiness, that kind of drama. Whereas I think the champion's charm is the sort of lightheartedness that the superpowers have. Rather than Hopkirk is another series where the ethereal elements are what gives it its sort of charm and humour. And I think that was lost a little bit in this episode. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it was still a great piece of drama. I enjoyed it very much. I thought William Gaunt was really excellent in this particular episode. Stuart Damon was his lovely fun self. Not as much for Alexandra Bastido as maybe in some other episodes. And the guest cast all very good. It was a fine piece of 50-minute ITC drama. But I just think, compared to what other episodes of The Champions can do, I felt it was a little bit underwhelming.
Interesting. Of course, we've already given name checks to two of our fine midweek drivettes from times past, of course, sadly no longer with us. Alexandra Pastudi, who mentioned as one, Kate O'Mara being the other, both of whom had clocked up, I think, around about 8 or 9 shows with us back in the day. But let's talk about your favourite moments, though, Rick. Did you have any particular favourite moments which, even though this wasn't your favourite series or episode of the series, shall we say, still for the eighth edition or the eighth adventure, originally I think aired in the United States on the 13th of November 1968, so literally just the day before Prince Charles's birthday. Interesting fact there of no apparent use, but maybe it might be. Do you have any favourite moments?
All of your facts have uses, Alex. We must pinpoint our points with that. I loved the little scene where William Gaunt and Stuart Damon were sort of almost fighting over who was going to see the girl in a carriage. I thought that kind of summed up their characters really nicely. So I enjoyed that moment. I enjoyed the scenes at the zoo. I thought that was an interesting way of putting that scene in. The bit with William Gaunt and the bad guy in the flat sort of being hypnotized or whatever was good fun as well. I also enjoyed the dinner scene with the lady actress whose name escaped me, Miss Roney, and Stuart Damon as well. I thought that was a nice scene. I thought that was good. If you had to kind of sum up the characters, they were scenes which I think worked well, because I think the humour of the performances is what makes the Champions what it is. And I think each of those scenes had a little bit of that. It was kind of slightly more lighthearted. After all, it was a very sort of serious plot points, you know, drug abuse and so on. And the scenes with Kate O'Mara were sort of very intense and so on. I felt those little lighter moments were really what helped the episode.
Interesting, Sandra Hirst, the character portrayed by Adina Ronay, that was a character we haven't really focused on because I think it was not quite peripheral, but obviously in a sense she was part of the drug conspiracy and so on. And I noticed she'd also appeared fairly regularly in shows like Department S, The Avengers and A Study in Terror. So again, had knocked up a number of sort of key areas with respect to the system. But is she still around these days, Adina, or has she passed?
No, she's very much still with us. She does appear at some of these, what we might call sort of signing shows, you know, film fairs and so on, where you can meet and greet and get autographs signed and so on. No, she's very much still with us. And I think she's really good in this. It's nice to see that they had, you know, undoubtedly a beautiful girl, but not playing a victim. You know, obviously Kate O'Mara was doing that. And a lot of, obviously all these ITC shows had the kind of what one might unkindly say sort of totty of the week, you know, who'd not given very much to do. It was nice to see that somebody was playing a sort of villain role with intelligence and guile and so on, as Adina Ronay did in this episode. It was nice to see an actress be given that sort of role rather than a victim. I think she did that very well. And yes, she appears in lots of these shows. Landon Hopkirk, she's in as well. I think she's great fun. I think she always gives a good performance, believable performance, very beautiful as well, obviously. And yeah, she's very much still with us. I mean, maybe one day we could have her as a guest.
Do you know, I think you're absolutely right, because just looking through the whole process, she was originally born in Budapest in Hungary. And, of course, how could we forget, given obviously our connection with William Sitwell, she's the daughter, of course, of Egon Ronay, the food critic extraordinaire. So there we are. The Michelin star actor person from that point of view. So interesting line there. So, yes, we definitely need to chase that one up. Let us move on, though, to your favourite characters. I mean, you've already alluded to some of them. Are there any that you'd like to give any honourable mentions to, or any particular ones which you think, actually, I think Tremaine once again managed to do his curmudgeonly, avuncular self to a T with respect to Anthony Nichols in this particular one? Or is it somebody else?
Absolutely. He gives his standard performance, doesn't he? Very, very good indeed. I'm actually going to go with the actor's name has escaped me, and that's very bad research on my part. The sort of blonde villain who we see throughout, you know, the sort of drug pusher, rather than the end villain. I thought he was, one of these Tudor furniture performances. I thought was great as a kind of over the top, sort of very camp, sort of but menacing at the same time villain. I thought that actor gave a really nice performance, kind of slightly reminiscent of a sort of Ian Ogilvy type figure. I thought. But I enjoyed his performance very much. I thought Kate O'Mara did a good job, as always, as a sort of, you know, very manic performance at the beginning, which I think obviously the part needed. I thought she was great. So I think I'll probably share the spoils between them. Obviously, the three leads are obviously what makes the show, and we can't not talk about those. I felt, as I say, I think I said this at the beginning, that Alexandra possibly didn't have as much to do as she did in some other episodes. What they'd like to do on The Champions was kind of rotate who the lead of the three would be for that episode. You know, there are some episodes where William Gaunt is very much the one that sort of steals the show, and there were other episodes for Sharon and episodes for Stuart Damon as well. This one was kind of for the two boys, really, and I enjoyed the interaction between the two of them. I thought they had a great rapport, the two lads on this series. And Alexandra as well, of course. But they who stole the show for me for this episode.
Well, that makes sense. Guy Rolfe, was he the actor who played Walter Pelham, who was there? Or was it Michael Standing as Frank Edwards? I think it was one of those two that you sort of put forward there. Again, yep. We already mentioned Toke Townley as the peanut vendor, who, of course, a classic routine. Okay, next up, your score for the episode in its entirety. What mark out of 10 are you going to give this, Rick?
If I was giving The Champions overall a mark, I would give that a 9 out of 10. It's a fantastic series, very close to a 10. I think for this episode, I'm going to give a strong 7. It was a good piece of ITC drama for 50 minutes, but I just felt that it didn't embrace the concept of The Champions.
Mm. And share with us, how can people actually have quizzes on The Champions through your own publications and other ITC series?
Oh, that's very very kind of you. If people would like to head over to coitmedia.co.uk, or they can obviously just go on Amazon, Waterstones, eBay and other vendors, they can pick up a copy of the ITC quiz book, which I wrote, which includes several chapters on not only the champions, but some of the actors within it as well. And also check out Playboy, Spies and Private Eyes, which is a collection of sort of essays and articles about each of the ITC series. It includes a great piece about the champions from David Tully. Thanks for the offer of a plug, Alex. Very kind of you, as always.
Always important, as we'll be keeping very quiet in our next episode of Resonance Rewind, because literally those nice, kindly gentlemen will have stolen our voices away. It is indeed, as mentioned earlier in the programme, Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 4's episode, Hush! Until then, keep on resonating.
That siren radio, turn up everyone, save a siren sound. Come linking to Miami, Paris to LA. Our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping up, 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 say Siren Radio.
Time ago, came a man on the track, walking 30 miles with a sack on his back. Put down his load, thought it was the best, made a home in the wilderness. Put a cabin in a winter storm, and looked up the ground by the cold lake shore. The troubles came right down the track. Then I went back. Then came the churches, then came the schools, then came the lawyers, then came the roads, then came the trains and the truck with the roads, the dirty old tracks, telegraph road. Thank you.
came the mice, then came the art, then there was a hard times, then there was a war. Turn around, sing the songs about the world outside. Turn around, road gets too deep, so why? Like a rolling river. Of traffic, three lanes move.